Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan and this is our budget podcast. Shadow Assistant Treasurer Andrew Lee is with us today to talk about Labor's response to the budget and its alternative. Andrew Lee, just starting with the big picture, in the very broadest terms, what kind of budget would a Labor government have delivered this week?
Michelle, we would have delivered a budget which faced down Australia's big economic challenges. They include declining living standards. Income per capita in real net terms has declined 4% since the government came to office. Flagging innovation, which has seen too few Australian firms develop new-to-the-world innovations. And rising inequality, where the gap between rich and poor now is as high as it's been in three quarters of a century. And to answer those challenges requires a budget which doesn't give more to the rich than it does to the poor, and a budget which invests in the productive capacity of the nation rather than taking money out of infrastructure, schools and hospitals.
Could you just give us an audit of where Labor stands on the big items in this budget so far on the tax side? What would you support? What would you oppose?
Well, we clearly support the measures that were copied from Labor. The government's decision to bring back the low-income super contribution and give it a new name, having eliminated it in a previous budget, is one that we welcome. We support the change to tobacco excise, a measure which we believe will add to the budget bottom line and discourage young Australians from taking up smoking. And we're in the broad supportive of the changes in superannuation, though we have some reservations around the retrospective nature of some of those changes. On the other side, we're concerned about the company tax cut, an unfunded company tax cut, talked about as a 10-year plan, but with no bill attached to that plan. Chris Richardson, writing in the Financial Review, estimates that it's a $55 billion cost, which means that it would significantly blow out the budget. And we're concerned about the government's decision to give a very large income tax cut to those at the top of the distribution. For example, the government wants to give a $17,000 tax cut to someone on $1 million income. We don't think that's fair or will boost growth.
Now, you support the action on bracket creep, the taking up of the rate from $80,000 to $87,000, right? But you would keep the deficit levy that's due to come off.
That's right. I mean, we've pointed out, as many others have, that the impact of the increase in the threshold from $80,000 to $87,000 is only worth $6 a week. It's not a sandwich and a milkshake tax cut, it's a sandwich or a milkshake tax cut. And when you cut it in at $80,000, that means that three quarters of Australian workers don't get anything.
A year ago in his budget reply, Bill Shorten called for a bipartisan aspiration to get company tax for small businesses down to 25%. Now, the government has that aspiration. Of course, it also proposes to get company tax for large businesses down to that amount. But I just wonder where that aspiration of last year goes now if you're worried about these tax cuts?
Well, Michelle, last year Bill called for the government to work with Labor on a plan. They haven't worked with us, they haven't engaged with us on the plan that Bill proposed. Instead, they've put a plan of their own on the table. That sees most of the company tax cut go to the biggest companies in Australia. Consistent with what Bill said last year, Labor will be supporting the reduction in the company tax rate for small firms. But we don't think that a $1 billion firm is a small business. And we're raising an eyebrow or two at the notion that you have to get the way the Liberals are giving tax cuts to big businesses is by redefining them as small firms. As my colleague Ed Husick said the other day, this is a little bit like suggesting that Donald Trump's just a local builder.
The budget has been described as one that doesn't frighten the horses, that is, the voters. Doesn't this mean that Labor doesn't have a lot to work with in this budget?
Well, certainly you wouldn't say that people were unfrightened if you were thinking about a single parent who was on, say, $80,000 with a couple of children. That person, that family, would be losing thousands of dollars a year under the family payments cuts that are entrenched under this budget. So for many Australians, the cuts that they've seen to schools, to hospitals, to family payments, the impact of the government's failure to invest in the social safety net generally is a scary prospect indeed. And yet what the budget's doing is essentially locking in big giveaways to the top end of town at a time when inequality is as high as it's been in my lifetime.
Neither side these days seems particularly preoccupied with the challenge of getting back to surplus. It's just gone down in priorities. And yet the rating agencies seem to be much more concerned with this, with the need for Australia to engage in budget repair. Do you think that Australia's AAA rating is in any danger?
Moody's certainly does. The statements that they made recently were particularly pointed and were a critique of Treasurer Morrison's unwillingness to look at tax measures as well as at making cuts to payments. Moody's was clear that the AAA credit rating is potentially at risk, and you can see why they'd be worried. And the pre-election economic and fiscal outlook, the budget deficit for 2013-14 was projected at $30 billion. The budget deficit now for the coming year, 2016-17, is projected at $37 billion. So the gap between what the government raises and what it spends has grown during the coalition's time in office, and that's increased total debt by $123 billion, or $5,000 for every Australian.
Surveys show that Labor often starts behind in the debate about economic credentials. How do you strengthen your position in the next 2 months on that front?
It's very important for us to have clear plans laid out, and that's a part of the reason why Bill Shorten and the team have put out more policies than any other opposition since 1993. We've done that in areas such as negative gearing and cigarette taxation, in areas like the sharing economy, competition policy, family violence. We've been willing to put a great deal of policy on the table, Michelle, for precisely this reason, that we want to engage the policy debate and make sure that Australians have a real choice in economic leadership when it comes to the July the 2nd poll.
You have put a lot of policy out, and some of it's been quite bold, like the negative gearing policy. How do you firewall yourself against scare campaigns? Because in elections, people just hear the generalities. There's such a barrage of material. They don't pore over the fine print. They get an impression, and it can be a scary one.
The challenge for, as always, is to fight fear campaigns with facts and to be absolutely clear about what the facts are on the ground. Malcolm Turnbull's running a ferocious fear campaign, for example, on Labor's changes to negative gearing capital gains tax, changes that are aimed to tilt the playing field in favour of new homeowners and away from property speculators. But his scare campaign falls on the fact that when more radical changes than those Labor are proposing were implemented in the mid-1980s, they didn't cause nationwide rents to rise, as some people have alleged. You saw changes in particular markets due to the particular circumstances of those markets, but the policy didn't have the effect the Prime Minister is suggesting.
The government accuses Labor of class war politics. And isn't there indeed an element of this, because you taunt Malcolm Turnbull from time to time about his richness and being a toff, I suppose?
Whenever I hear Scott Morrison to Malcolm Turnbull talking about class war, I'm reminded of, I think it's Warren Buffett, who says there's a class war going on, all right? It's being waged by my class and we're winning. And it's not hard to imagine how middle-income Australians would feel that they're under fire when they've seen their earnings either stagnate or rise much more slowly than those at the top. The inequality gap in Australia is a real concern to many Australians. After a generation in which the top 1% share has doubled, which we've seen twice as many private planes, three times as many private helicopters, Porsche sales going through the roof, and yet one in five Australians can't afford a whole day away from home with their kids. It feels to many Australians as though the traditional egalitarian Australia is slipping out of reach. And yes, we need to do something about that.
So we do have a class society.
There's economic gaps that are widening, middle and lower income Australians have gotten a raw deal under this government. They've gotten a raw deal under this budget, and they have a right to say to those that are at the top of the distribution. And let's face it, any politician in Australia is close or in the top 1%. That you need to make sure that you're governing for all Australians.
Now, Andrew Lee, you're an inveterate book writer. Do you feel a book coming on in this campaign?
I certainly don't write campaign books, Michelle. Policy is the thing for me. So,
well, it's a policy-rich campaign.
Look, I'm interested in a range of policy issues from inequality to social capital, randomised policy trials to international affairs. But campaign is a time to be out there on the hustings, working in my own seat and also on marginal seat campaigns across the country. So I suspect I'll be a little too busy to put pen to paper between now and July the 2nd.
Thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all for the Conversations Budget podcast. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins, and we'll be back with you again soon.